You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Brian the Kid Callen. Hunter Motz can't join me. I have the great Dom Marrera, a man I've been watching do stand-up before I did stand-up.
All right.
In college.
Why you got to be hurtful?
I know.
Why's it got to start off with the hurt? Listen, I just want to do my plugs and get out of here, right?
Well, you said you got to get out of here in 45 minutes. You got to go dye your hair for the holidays, right?
Yeah, dyeing my hair for the holiday. Yeah. You know what's funny about how you diffuse stuff? I was at a college reunion, and this girl, she was probably trying to get me. She goes, boy, you look different. Did you get a haircut? You shave your mustache? I go, no, I dye my hair once a month, like clockwork. And then she didn't have anything to say.
That was it. I got to dye my beard. I was told to dye my beard because it's gray in down here and it'll alienate my younger audience.
That's what I don't want to scare the kids.
I don't know what that means.
Grandpa's up there. Yeah. We got UCLA students that I still have a shot with. God bless them. For their graduation present, I give them a little of the old Schlazil, Brian. Come on.
A little Schlazil,
hey.
Eh?
Hey.
I'm from Philly. I was just in your hometown.
I
love that town. I like Philly because, you know, you come to L.A., people come to reinvent themselves. They create their own reality. In Philly, you're part of a bigger program. It's where the Constitution was written. This is a city with great history, and people are working for a living, and it's an aggressive town. You got Irish, Italian,
they're proud
generations.
Of their racism there.
Oh, proud of their racism. I've talked to pro athletes who say, you get booed, you get hurt. And they clap for you in other stadiums. In Philly, they boo you. Michael Irvin said he
Michael
hurt his
Irvin,
neck,
yeah.
And they booed him.
I know. He was his spine was almost broken, and they're booing him on the ground.
Yeah. It's an aggressive part of the world. I love it. But what is it about Philly?
Well, I did a thing on with a couple of the girls at the Laugh Factory where they're always turning me on to this, Instagram, these you kids today.
Yeah.
Like, I'm such an idiot. Chris D'Elia did it, and all I got was pictures of him and his girlfriend for a year. But the girls at the comedy, at the Laugh Factory, rather, wanted to take pictures. So I did, and I put, and the girls, I don't know if you know, we got one of the hottest staffs ever. It's worth it just to come in just to see these girls. And I have pictures, and one of the captions I wrote was, boy, I wish my Hollywood friends are a lot hotter than my Philly friends. I got like all kinds of calls. I had to do like a retraction.
Oh, I
go, come on, I'm a professional comedian. Give me a break.
Forget it. They will come after you.
They'll throw batteries at you, too.
Well, you got fanatics. You got Eagles fanatics, the Phillies. I mean, you got sports. They take their sports. I was on Angelo's sports show.
Angelo Cataldi.
Yeah, Angelo Cataldi. Great guy. But these guys get into their sports. I mean, this is a religion in Philly. It's no joke.
No, they really get sick. The first quarter of the first game, Foles, their quarterback, he had like a couple bad moments. Put Sanchez in. He was only in for three plays.
You get no quarter. Now, do you miss it?
No, I don't miss it because I see it enough. I mean, it's my best draw, that area. So I do the casino. I do Helium.
Yeah.
I do Tropicana. And I'll do like sometimes Wildwood. Wildwood is a whole different place. Have you ever been down there?
No,
it's a whole different world. It's like South Jersey right before Cape May.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I've been down there.
That's all right. They're the only barrier reef island that has subsidized housing on it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They got like the beautiful beach and beautiful bay, and they got like free houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bad neighborhood. Don't go in there, Brian.
Don't go in there. How long have you been doing stand-up now?
What's today?
What was the first time you did stand-up?
Today, Thursday, Wednesday?
Yeah, Thursday.
That'd be 30 years.
30.
I don't know. Since 1980, I passed at the Improv.
1980.
Killed. You should have seen that set, Brian.
You should have seen that set.
It all comes back to me like the hot kiss at the end of a wet fist. I'm telling you, I was on that night. I wish I had a copy.
How do you write your jokes?
It's a gift. They come to me like an archangel comes to me in the night. I can't write, man. I'm so retarded. They come like...
Well, you're just funny in your sleep. You're always, that's how you think.
I'll give you an example of something that might work. A friend of mine says to me, I was in Philly a couple weeks ago for Thanksgiving. He goes, he's in Atlantic City. He's a big time lawyer. He goes, listen, if you're available, I'll come in for lunch. I'll drive in. So I called him up on Monday and I said, you know what? Tomorrow, if you want to come in, he goes, oh man, I wish I could come, but my best friend's mother's died and I got to go to the funeral. He said, but if anything changes, I'll call you. I go, what's going to change?
He's going to come back from that.
He's going to have a resurrection?
Yeah.
They're going to put the funeral off? You know.
unbelievable.
But I mean, I think that's the best way to get material. How do you get it?
I don't know. I just ask questions. I ask myself what I'm afraid of, who I'm trying to be.
You have a beautiful physique. Do you use that at all in your act?
You know, it's arresting. My physique is so arresting, I think, when I take my shirt off. Or if I wear something tight, I think the audience is focusing on that.
Yeah.
But I have the kind of act that actually cuts through even that, you know.
It's hard to keep, I mean, as a straight guy,
yeah,
it's hard to not imagine you as a woman.
That's, I don't know if that's a compliment.
I don't know how else to put it. But anyway, you're beautiful.
No, I appreciate it. It might be my elegance, the grace with which I move through
You move
space.
Like a cat in the wind with a breeze to your back.
I hear that a lot because my ass is always perked.
Now you're doing another Hangover movie?
No, I've decided not to do those anymore.
I think
three is enough. But I did two.
Well,
and the third one, they wanted me to come and play. I was doing something else.
I don't think film's for you. I gotta tell you, I think maybe Jimmy's Clam Bar in Bayonne.
Listen, I'd rather. At least it'd be steady. At least it'd be fucking steady.
Well, you got steady work on the road, don't you?
Yeah, but not really. You never know. I mean, look, stand-up. Look, I like stand-up. I'm one of those guys who likes the road. You know, I do.
Me too.
I can't believe I get to do it for a living. I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
It's great.
And you can make a living. You said to me something I never forgot. You said, you know, you didn't make a fortune, but you haven't had to look at a price tag since 1987.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
That's incredible.
I know. And I know what it's like. I mean, I one of the girls that I live with and we broke up, and she says, I never had to look at the price of food before. I never had, you know, until I broke up with you.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's sad.
Did you grow up with money or no?
No, are you kidding?
No money.
My father left home when I was in second grade. He was a Marine, a boxer, a fireman, and he didn't support us at all. And my mother, she was working for like nothing, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many kids?
Two, but we had other cousins living in the house. My grandparents took care of us, you know.
What did you, 100% Italian, right?
Yeah, well, three quarters Italian, one quarter Sicilian. You got a problem with that?
No, I'm half Sicilian, so I understand.
What's your other half, Irish?
Yeah.
That's a great combo. That's a very common combo.
Very common.
Because they came over to the United States around the same time.
Yeah, very
and
different.
And they banged
cultures.
Each other to death.
They took care of each other. They met my brother, met your sister in school, and that's all she wrote. I don't approve, but at the end of the day, at least the guy's fucking Catholic.
That's right. I like those Irish girls, too.
Yeah, I prefer the Italians.
See, I like the Midtown look.
Yeah?
That's what they call it.
I like the Jews, the Spaniards, and the Italians.
I married a Jew.
You did? I didn't know you were ever married.
Yeah. I was married with her for five and then five more married. And it was hard because she was an actress, too. And it was like, you know, whatever I'd get, anything, she'd go, can you put in a word for me? I go, what power do I have? I had to audition. How powerful could I be if I had to dance for these fucking guys?
You got to dance. You don't audition anymore either, do you?
No, never. No way.
You're done.
The only time, this is a name dropper special, but it's not even an audition. And it shows you how tough the business is. Ready? Name drop one after another. Sean Penn calls me up. Bang, 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 bang.
He
goes, you want to do this? We're having a reading for a movie. I want you to come in and read for it. I got a couple parts in mind for you. I said, cool. And I'm in Cleveland. It's snowing sideways. I think tomorrow I'm going to be with Sean Penn. Robert De Niro, Chaz Palminteri, Renee Zellweger, who we both love.
Yeah.
They were all there for the reading, right? And this was not an audition, which made it even better because those guys I probably would audition for.
Sure.
Anyway, it just shows you how tough this business is. We're talking about it. They didn't get the finances. You know, Jamie.
Unbelievable.
Jamie's my manager.
Yeah.
He's such a goofball. He's just showing. He goes, why you don't put Dom in movie, you know, whatever his accent is. I go, and he starts explaining. I go, don't fucking explain yourself to him.
He's Sean Penn.
Yeah, he's got to hear this shit. And he comes upstairs. He goes, listen, man, you know, we wanted you for that. It was the finances. I'm thinking to myself, you and De Niro couldn't pitch in a little? But anyway,
yeah.
Didn't work out.
Well, that's what happens, though. You know, the financing people say, no,
but
not with that guy.
That's
you
why
can't do it.
I love the funny bone in Columbus is not going to close. It's doing so well. So I love the security of that and the independence.
Well, I think that stand-up has hurt my acting career because I always have that and I prefer it. I like it more.
Yeah.
You know, how many times has that happened to me where now it's so funny whenever somebody says, I wrote a part for you. I know that that's a rookie because I always say, you obviously don't know the business. You may have written a part for me. You've got zero say, and I mean zero say, on whether or not I'm fucking going to be in your movie. Let me tell you why. Because you're going to go get your, you need your $5 million, $10 million, $3 million. That group of people with that kind of money, they made their money because they're very careful and they know how to make their money back. The first thing they're going to say is, hey, we looked at the numbers. Brian Callen's worth nothing, but you do have Heather Graham and this other guy who's worth something because they're on some vampire movie.
Right.
That's who you have to get if you want my money. It's just economics. So, you know, for me, there are so many moving parts to getting a part, to getting a job.
Yeah.
I don't want to play that game anymore. If it's there, it's there. Otherwise, I'll see you later. I'll be in Philly at Helium. I'll be in fucking Fort Lauderdale doing stand-up and having a blast.
I'll be in Tampa at Side Splitters on the 15th and 16th of January.
True? When's
this go up?
16th?
We're not on the air, are we?
No, but we'll go up soon. I'll be in January 8th and 9th and 10th, Laugh Boston. Have you done that?
I love that. I'll be there in April.
It's great. And then yeah. I got Fort Lauderdale Improv.
You know what I love about it? You can roll out of bed and you go on stage.
Crazy, right?
What'd you say, Fort Lauderdale, the Improv?
Yeah, I love that place.
One of the best clubs in the world.
One of the best clubs in the world. They go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's that Latin thing. I say this a lot. Probably not so out loud. There's something about Latin culture I just can't get enough of. I love it. I really have this obsession.
I've known you for years. I've never heard you say that.
I have an obsession with, I think, with, let me, I'll expand. I think Latin people in general are the best looking people overall. I would like to look that way. The caramel skin, the dark hair.
I am Dan Cordoba.
Yeah, the attitude. There's something about the culture. And I'm talking about all of South America from my experience. Mexico, but Mexico's different. But I'll explain my own thing with Mexico. There's a cosmopolitan sort of like a love for life. So when they're out, they're laughing, they're having a blast. There's also this pride, and my favorite fighters, the natural warriors, the Mexicans. You get in a fight with a Mexican, you better pack a fucking lunch. I'm drawing large conclusions here, but there's something about the boxers. You look at Mexican boxers, they stand in a phone booth. They're not retreating. They're standing their ground. You got to knock them out of the way. It's why by the time they're 29, they're an old fighter and they can't fight anymore because they've taken so many shots to the head. But there's something about that natural kind of warrior machismo that not only do I respect, I just find it to be downright romantic. I love it. And you combine that with sort of this zest for life, wherever it comes from. Best audiences in the world. Best fucking audiences in the world. Cubans? Oh, my God. Forget the fact that they're beautiful people.
Forget the fact that they're Dolphins fans, too. Go and Dolphins.
They're Dolphin fans. I just think they're the rowdiest, funnest crowds.
I go to a Dolphin party. It's all Cubans on Sunday sometime. My friend Julio Machoza is a... Damarero! The man who made the world laugh. He's always got one of these things. Yeah. But it's fun, you know.
Yeah.
Our big star is Andy Garcia, who's always trying to tell jokes. I'm thinking, Andy, one of the most accomplished actors I know. Stop with the jokes.
Does he try to tell jokes?
Oh, God.
You know him?
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he's funny. But yeah. He has to stop with the jokes. No. I'm a comedian. You think I want to hear jokes?
No.
It's like
a therapist
hearing about emotional problems when he goes to a party. You know what? You know what I think really fucked me up as a kid. You know that one of those things. Like, please don't tell me a joke.
I'm a professional. It happens to me every time. There's always some guy.
I just say, please keep it brief, because I just got off stage. You know? No, this is a good one. Two lesbians are fist fucking on a bar. You ever hear it? Right? It's like no.
I wrote it. I wrote it and improved on it. Go back to your dad. Your dad.
You have to do lesbians.
Yeah, your dad was, you talked a little bit about him, but your dad was this tough guy.
Yeah.
And then he disappeared, but you reconnected, right?
No.
No.
Well, we reconnected for a moment, but then my sister had breast cancer, and it was killing her and killing me and all of us. We loved her so much. And he's so stupid. Like, he's so fucking ignorant. You know what he says to me? Because he's like everything about being physically in shape. He's like, 80, I don't know, he's 87, he's still running and shit.
Jesus.
It's crazy. But he said, boy, she really gained weight. Somebody's got to talk to her. This is after she's coming out of remission from cancer. I go,
unbelievable.
Gained weight? I don't give a fuck if she's 800 pounds. I love her. I want her alive.
Yeah.
You know, he's so stupid. So that's when I had an ocular migraine after hearing what he said. And that was the last time I really talked to him.
Really?
But the thing about him, he fucking hates me because I'm more famous than him.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
He's like a real narcissist.
Oh, yeah, total. I went to Camp Lejeune. Both my brothers were in the Marines. And my brother Joe's just gotten back from, like, another tour of Afghanistan. Enough with the Afghanistan, you know. And
is he still in the military?
No? Yeah, but he's in the reserves now. He's doing. Yeah. He's teaching something. I don't know. He's working part-time at Camp Lejeune. My other brother's totally not. He was only a Marine because the family was, you know.
Yeah.
But my father was like, he used to tell me, he goes, I could beat any 10 men. I'm a little kid. I'm going, wow, Dad, that's cool. Who tells a kid that?
Yeah, I can beat up any 10 men.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You beat up 10 guys, huh?
Yeah, right. Nah. Maybe once a month and they're all like frail. And
yeah, if they're asleep.
But you know, it's funny because I can remember him coming home, and this is the tough thing about boxing. He'd win and he would look horrible.
Jesus.
Both eyes closed, you know, cotton in his nose, just fucking cauliflower ears. Because, you know, boxing, you can't,
was he a
you know,
big
if
guy?
You're a 500 hitter in baseball, you're the best baseball player that ever lived. That's you're right. A 500 boxer, you're a chump.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
A palooka.
He was an amateur boxer?
No, he was a pro.
Wow. Well, how big was he?
I guess he was a welterweight. What's that, about 140?
45.
You know, 45, yeah. He taught me how to box, and you asked me before about boxing. I was never like a tough kid or a mean kid. But I knew how to box a little. All you got to know is a little.
All you got to know is a little.
When I was in the ring at camp, I would like just do this thing where I would fake a punch to their stomachs, and they would drop their hands, and then I'd crack them in the face. I knocked kids' teeth out. They had to stop me from boxing. And I'm not telling you, I'm not like I was the badass kid.
Yeah,
like,
but you had a punch problem.
But I knew how to hit, and I knew how to, when you were talking about boxing before the show, you know, like the leverage you do, like with the torque, you know, like Mike Tyson, nobody knew that better than him.
Yeah.
The way he did
it. You hit from your body. It's the torque.
It's just like racquetball. You use your whole, your back, your legs.
Sure.
And, you know, when you know how to hit, it was kind of, I mean.
But he disappeared when you were young. And would he come back?
At second grade.
Where'd he go?
He started another family.
Jesus.
And then he.
Would you see him or you just didn't even see him?
Not much. My brother told me something really interesting. My brother Tom, he had two kids, and they were both, at the time, they were 7 and 4, two little girls. And he said, when I look at these kids, I don't know how he could leave you.
Me neither.
I don't know how. I said, because, Tom, you have to understand people are programmed differently. I mean, how could somebody get a hard on if they're raping somebody because they're sick fucks?
Right.
It's not a normal person that could do that.
Right.
If I ever attempted rape, I would go to the girl, are you okay? We don't have to do this. The rapist.
Well, that's how I felt with the Cosby thing. People were saying this. I said, look, I don't care if he was great in his life for the most part. He's a rapist.
Yeah.
You know, that's a shithead all the way across the board to me.
And the irony is his pomposity towards those young black comedians who are trying to make a living, whether their pants were too low, who gives a shit, and because of their language. Bad language does not equate to a felony.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, clean your own house up, my friend.
Yeah, what a phony.
It's a very weird thing. People are complicated, but boy, that's where you all bets are off for me. When you do stuff like that, you know, you just go,
they're programmed differently. They have to be, or they couldn't do it.
I agree.
They're wired differently. Now, what was your first Cosby joke?
My first Cosby joke? Oh, I heard his new special is a porn.
I did.
So terrible.
That's
not even my joke. That's my buddy Timmy Chambers. Timmy Chambers' sister gave me that joke. I mean, she's a woman told me that joke, so, you know.
Mine was, mind if I do it on the air?
No.
I don't care. I was raped by Bill Cosby from late September of 1979 till the early fall of 1984, and I'm so tired of these women blabbing off about him because it ruins it for the people like me who enjoyed being raped by him. It's probably pretty fucking sick, huh? And I said, the only way I could come...
That's the punchline?
Well, no, it's not I mean, it's, you know... I said, the only way I could come at one point was if he did the Fat Albert voice. That got me over the top.
Are you going to tell that joke on stage?
No, I did.
This is what's great about being a comic. If you were an academic, you'd lose your job right now.
Oh, yeah.
As a comic, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
Well, hopefully they know you're kidding.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
You're not pro-rape. And that's my problem with how politically correct we are. I think that... I know you, and you know me. I really am not somebody. I believe in a meritocracy. I am a feminist. I'm not a fucking liberal left wing guy. But I like the sense of fair play. you rape somebody, and I can, you know, I'll take a fucking bat to your head, right? You're a bully. You're a scumbag.
Oh, yeah.
If you if you're really prejudiced, if you really are a shithead, to if you don't like women, or you know, you humiliate a woman by sexually harassing her so you can get ahead. You know, these are people who to me are assholes, right? They're assholes. So I'm not your enemy. Everybody, you know, so, but you got to still be very careful with the way you talk, because sometimes when you're in a public forum, you get all this heat. Alec Baldwin calls a paparazzi guy a cocksucker, and the lunatic fringe on the, in the gay community, in the gay circles, the lunatic fringe come after him and talk about what a homophobe he is. Alec Baldwin is not a homophobe. Alec Baldwin did a whole lot of work. He's passionate about gay rights, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Couldn't be more left. And you're pointing your guns at a target that doesn't deserve it. It doesn't deserve it. He was pissed off. Some asshole. Cocksucker's a great fucking word. Don't take that away from me. It doesn't mean I'm homophobic if I call you a cocksucker. It means I hate your fucking guts.
Yeah,
and, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. When we don't have a society that allows for just good faith, humorous insults.
Well,
and humorous insults might be a little offensive. So what?
Yeah, they don't know the difference between colloquialisms and then just what literally what something means.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I have a thing in my act, but it's about black guys saying motherfucker more than general people say it.
Yeah.
Because one of the things was a friend of mine, and I honestly, we're driving to watch football on a Sunday. He's a black guy from Mississippi. Very bright, but he talks hilarious. He goes, you know what, Nicky? I would jump in front of a bullet for you, my brother. Right? He talks like that. And everything's motherfucker. I said, Mike, do you realize how much you say motherfucker? He goes, I don't say motherfucker that much, motherfucker. You know, but he didn't even get that he was like making a joke. But they don't mean it. There's no sex in it. Motherfucker has nothing to do with a mother.
There are some words like faggot. Okay, the reason faggot is something I don't use anymore was because I had a gay man a long time ago explain to me that word, when it was in the mouth of someone, was a lot of times being said as he was kicking some gay guy in the face.
Well, that's
And so there's a violent connotation to that. So I'm not going to say faggot. Because I don't want to make somebody feel badly. I don't know if that guy got beat up by some kid who called him a faggot and punched him in the face. So for me, the reason I'm not going to use that word or I'm sensitive to that word is I don't want to make somebody feel marginalized. I don't want to make somebody feel shitty.
Well,
nigger's the same way. You hear like black people say there's a difference between nigger and nigger. Yeah, nigger was used when they were lynching you. When a white mob was going, lynch that nigger. So I understand there's a violence behind that word, which is why, for me, it has a special place. That's why I don't use it, because once I learned, I never used it anyway, but when you understand—
Not even in traffic?
Just in traffic, only in traffic. Once you learn what it's attached to and what it's associated with, which is violence toward a group of people that didn't deserve it, et cetera, et cetera. Now you get more sensitive about it. And that's a better way of stopping empathy and compassion and understanding the origins of certain words
The confusion of that word is the guy that I was talking about is old enough to have been in Mississippi when they had colored people water fountains.
Jesus.
And it kind of broke my heart. You know, I thought, oh, geez, he went through this. And my mother
told me about that, seeing that.
And anyway, last week I'm at the comedy at the Laugh Factory, and they had, you know, Chocolate Sundays, which is mostly black acts.
Yeah.
And Donnell Rawlings comes back. He's kind of drunk, and I see him from maybe 8-10 feet. He goes, "Dom, my nigga, I love you, brother." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he didn't say nigga. He said nigger.
Yeah.
And he said it with love, and that's where the confusion comes in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, it's best not to use the word at all. But I hate saying the N word. I hate that N. I mean, come on, don't speak.
Because you grew up in Philly, where it was used in a very negative
when people say the N word.
Oh yeah.
Instead of saying, if you're gonna say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't say it with hate in your heart. But if you have to say a word, say the word.
Right.
You know. But
right. It's the intention behind the word.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had so many names for themselves. You know, the Mick, you know, the pig shit Irish, whatever they would say.
I think the difference, though, in the American experience is that if you were a Jew, Irish, if you were Italian, you could eventually blend in with the rest of the population because you looked so much, a lot more like them.
Yeah.
When you were black, you were black, and people could see it. And the minute you walk into a room, you were never losing that. People would immediately go, yeah, that guy's black. So there's a physical, reality to being Asian or black or whatever, where for a long time, you didn't even get to open your mouth. You walk into a room, that guy over there, you can't be in here. Sorry, bro. It's whites only.
Yeah.
It didn't say Italians only. It said whites only.
Well, they used to have places that Jews were not allowed into, too.
For many years. You couldn't belong to a lot of country clubs and
yeah,
stuff like
well, that.
Well,
that was that whole Groucho Marx joke, you know.
I never want to be a member of a club that wouldn't have me.
Yeah, that was about, I think, the Riviera Country Club.
Yeah.
Because then they wanted him when he was a star. You know, his son told me this story. It was so funny to hear Groucho Marx's voice coming out of another person.
Really?
Because he sounded just like his father. Yeah, I met
my mother, being Sicilian, when her father made some money, they moved to Pelham and upstate, you know, sort of like, you know, about 40 minutes outside of the city. Uh-huh. And that's what you did. When you were born and raised in Brooklyn, you made money. You went to the suburbs. You got a nice house right, and you lived among the WASPs. And my mother has a very, very, she never forgot this. She was roller skating in the driveway. And she remembers.
She must have looked hot.
She looked very hot. She was a kid. And she remembered her mother, the mother of her friend said, I don't want her roller skating in the front yard. I don't want the neighbors to see that.
See an Italian?
The Italians.
Because she's too hot.
It was like being Mexican or something. Like today, I always say the Mexicans, that's why I don't like Mexican jokes, because you hear people make these jokes, I'm always like, the Mexicans, listen, the Italians were the Mexicans, and then the Mexicans, as they gain more and more of a foothold, there's going to be the Arabs, and then it's going to be, you know.
That's funny because, you know, I have that podcast that I do, Don Marrero Live from the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And Jamie was on it. Were you ever there when Jamie was on, or was it just you and I?
I wasn't there. I was just you and I.
Okay. Well, he stopped doing it. First of all, you know, he has like a Middle Eastern accent. Yeah.
He's a Persian Jew.
He's from Iran, then lived in Israel. So it's a very blended accent, and his English is horrible, but it's funny.
One of my favorite people.
Yeah. But somebody, they would write to me, they tweet to me, "Hey, Dom, show's really funny. Really enjoyed Bill Burr, whoever was on. But you got to drop the little, Mexican." I'm thinking, look, even if you're ignorant, at least check your facts.
At least check his nationality. It's Jamie Masada. I mean, Masada could be an Italian, you know.
I think it's a.
I mean, a Latin name, but maybe it's a made up name.
Actually, it's a mountain, I think, in Israel.
Masada?
I think so, yeah. But anyway, you know, I'm sure his name's not really Jamie.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't his God-given name.
No.
What do you think about do you think about death a lot? What do you think about?
I've always been obsessed with death. I think that's why I liked Woody Allen, because I can't imagine not existing. And I remember, it's funny, because I had I was reflecting on my life the other day, and I remember when I was like 4 years old, looking into a mirror, thinking, "Oh my God, someday I'm gonna die."
Yeah.
And I thought, "And I'm so cute." You know, like I was looking. I really thought, "I'm looking in the mirror. Look at me. I'm so cute. I'm gonna die. How could God take this away?"
For himself.
For himself.
So he can pet you.
Now I gotta go sing to him.
Yeah.
That is a funny concept, isn't it? Like with God to pray and
here's
sing.
Some angels. Here's a harp. Now learn your sonatas.
A better place, my ass.
A better place. I think about death, especially in the middle of the night. I don't know why. I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, and I get scared. I just think about, fuck, man, this is it.
Imagine being as old as me. I had a joke the other night. I said, look at me. I know I'm not looking good. I said, if I do everything right, if I stretch, if I hydrate, exercise, I got maybe a month and a half. Max, I'm out of here.
I'm gone.
And then you play the tape of me saying it. Listen to this. He knew.
He knew. He was prophetic. How old do you think you'll live till you're 90? You have good genes, though.
I got good genes, yeah. We had a very long-living family, but I don't know. I drink too much, Brian, you know.
You do? Why do you drink so much?
Because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But then this is the danger of being a comedian. You know, I set my alarm for yesterday? 5:10. Because I was meeting Dove for dinner at 7. 5:10 p.m.
So you went to bed at what time?
You know, like around 5. I'm out with the waitresses. They're like 23, and they're hungover. So imagine what I feel like.
So you need your 12 hours of sleep.
Yeah,
woke up at 5:10.
Like I told you before, I mean, I'm getting to the point where I turn over. I set my alarm to turn over so I don't get bed sores on my hip from laying down too much.
Well, you're on your third Zumba class. You told me.
Oh yeah.
Today.
Dancing is really my life. This comedy thing, it supplements my dance income.
No, I know that. I've always known that you're a secret dancer. You're a private dancer.
I have swivel hips.
You do.
And
you don't use them enough in your act. I wish you would.
Yeah, I love to jump around and dance.
You're lithe. You're like a serval, that cat that can jump 12 feet in the air.
Yeah, I did the Nutcracker. I do it every year.
And you're in the privacy of your at the Kennedy Center.
I do it. It's not really the Kennedy Center. It's
you squeeze into a girl suit.
Yeah. I mean, I used to dance with Udo Ogun I danced at Joe Papp's Theater's public theater.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. A lot of
amazing. Well, you still stretch, I'm sure.
Totally stretch.
You're like rubber.
I could put my legs behind my head, and you can try and throw stuff into my ass if you want.
That was that show you did in Tijuana for a long time.
Yeah.
How you sent yourself through college, right?
That's where Honeysuckle Divine shot ping pong balls out of her twat.
That's right.
That was really nice.
Yeah, sweet girl. She's at the comedy store right now, hanging around, looking for spots.
You know Shirippa, right?
Yeah, Steve Shirippa.
Shirippa says to me, there's a porn upstairs. I can't go. My family's here, but if you want to go. So me and Sophie, I remember Sophie, we go up, and the first thing I see is a girl peeing on another girl. I'm like, wow. They went right to the heart of this. She's cleaning her off. But anyway, these porn girls need so much attention, obviously. We're having a party. It's just a cocktail party. People are ha-ha and talking and witty and everything, drinking. And one girl, they needed attention. So she gets up on the piano, and she goes, you want to do your trick? And the girl goes, yeah. So she takes her panties off, puts her legs in the air, and the encasing for a cigar, she puts that inside of her, and the other girl's too close, and she shoots it out and hits the girl in the head, right?
No.
Like, hit real hard in the head. And, and she goes, ah, fuck. And the girl goes, I'm sorry. And I'm thinking, how much trajectory does this girl's twat have?
That's called high art.
Yeah.
That's a lot of power. Literally, when you said that, I went, she's got some strong vagina muscles.
What do you call that? Like
Kegels.
Yeah. Thanks.
What is
that? You haven't said a word the whole time. One thing that brightened up.
Rita Marie's like Kegels.
I'm doing them right now.
Are you really?
Good girl.
I thought I
good
smelled
girl,
something.
I'm creepy. We're both like, really?
Did you smell like Kegel?
I thought I smelled something. Little Kegels. I've spent enough time around porn people because of comedy. They hang around the comedy store.
I was there in the Kennison days. The whole place was filled with them.
Oh, my God. I bet.
I'm not trying to give you one of those, when I was a kid.
No, but listen, he was a real degenerate, wasn't he? He lived his life.
Sam had issues.
Did you know him pretty well?
Yeah, very well.
Really?
Yeah.
What was his deal?
Just like a lot of people, good and bad, but he was extreme in his bad when he was bad. He was the only one I ever blessed myself when I walked by when he was saying sacrilegious stuff because it used to put chills on the back of my head.
Is that right?
Yeah. But he was very funny.
He was a reverend or something, wasn't he?
That's what made him so riveting, Like he was such a powerful orator that,
What did he lose God or what happened?
I don't think at the end he did. I think he went back to God, what I heard.
Really?
But apparently he was angry and, he went off on that tangent. But he still used that verve of a reverend, and it was compelling to hear him, because his material was not as good as his reaction he got. He was so, he's such a great performer.
Mm. He was. Powerful.
Yeah.
And just big and heavy and just, he did everything in the extreme.
Oh, yeah.
With that beret. And the trench coat.
That was the big Coke days,
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. And a couple guys are lucky to be alive.
Did you know Robin Williams?
Yeah, very well.
You did?
Matter of fact, I can't listen to it because I'm too emotional about it still. But I did, I think one of the last podcasts he ever did, him and I did Rick Overton's podcast.
Oh, wow.
And Robin, when you got him alone, was great. Once two or three people were there, he couldn't stop, making the fork talk to the spoon.
Yeah.
And I said, all that
shit. He started to perform.
Yeah. But he was a great guy. You know what I loved about him, what I learned from him? This is one thing that makes me great. He never bragged. I'm kidding about that. But, I mean, he never bragged. It was amazing. Like, Robin had, he would come in the improv, and, he, you know, we didn't know he signed a 3-picture deal. We didn't know anything. You know, other guys, you know, I'm up for a part. I'm an under 5 in a soap opera.
Yeah.
I got to fly back to New York on my own dime. Wow, sounds great, you know. And Robin would get these movies and stuff and, you know, never.
Did you know he was depressed?
Well, I think all of us are a little depressed. Yeah. We wouldn't be funny. But I didn't know. I had no idea. I mean, if you'd have seen him the night that we were in Greenblatt's, we went upstairs, me, him, and Rick, and it was just Robin and I talking basically for 45 minutes. And he was so cool and so there. And never would I have dreamed. I was knocked out by that. I mean, I didn't know. I didn't even realize how much I loved the guy until he died. And just to think of him, it's a great. This isn't like an impulsive suicide where you go, oh, fuck life, and you jump off a bridge. This is calculated. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough at stuff to kill myself like that because I would fuck up the chair and the rope and everything would come down.
All the details.
I get hit in the face.
Yeah.
But, you know.
He hung himself? Is that how he did it?
He did that thing where I think you put yourself on a chair. It's a form of hanging yourself, and the chair goes backwards. But I think he tried another thing. It didn't work. Like, I don't know all the details, but I think he tried to slit his wrist or something, and he didn't go. But, I mean, imagine.
Think about that despair. It's never going
to
get better.
And especially to do that to your kids and your family. I mean, not just to
it's
you.
It's despair. I think that he's not even thinking clearly.
No, he couldn't be thinking
you
clearly.
You just can't go on.
Yeah, and I know what I've read about, like, heart operations can make you, you know, it's obviously...
It can change your personality. Yeah, your whole, he had a heart operation?
Yeah, he had open heart surgery and stuff. Yeah.
That's very true. They say Dick Cheney was, before he had his heart operation, he was a very different guy and would never have really supported even the Iraq War, apparently. He was just a very conservative thinking, had a lot of respect. And then had an open heart surgery, and they talked about his personality just completely changing. Whatever it does to your brain, you know, he was a different person. And that's common, I guess, or it can be when you have open heart surgery. Your personality will literally change.
I got to tell you something funny about these guys, you know, the brothers, the comedy brothers that have died. And Mitch Hedberg was a good friend of mine. And, you know, he used to work with me until he was headlining. And I loved working with him. He was so fucking funny. And we did a thing for him in Ireland. I go to Kilkenny every year. And we did, like, a tribute to him. And people were reading his jokes and stuff. So this year they decided to do another one, but expand it a little. So it was Mitch, Greg Giraldo, Rodney Dangerfield, and Stephen Wright. Right? So I said to one of my Irish friends, Barry Murphy, I think it was, I said, Bar, Stephen Wright's not dead. He goes, oh, fuck it. It's too late now. We still did his material.
He did his material.
Acted like he was
dead. I met him. He's a very strange guy. He won't shake hands. He's a germaphobe.
Oh, is he one of those?
Strange guy.
Like Howie?
Yeah. Like nice, but just kind of, I talked to him for a while.
See, I like to do a little tongue. I'm the other way.
Of course. Get your tongue
I like
in
to
there.
Just go rim your fucking
come
mouth.
Come over here. Let me see your ass. Be a baby. Baboons do it. Why can't I? But
they got the advantage of having
Wright,
a red
what happened to him? He stopped doing stand-up?
I don't know. I never seen him. I haven't seen him in years. I haven't seen him in 15 years. But I'll tell him you said hello.
But you were friends with Giraldo, too, huh?
Yeah.
It's really a bummer when somebody that funny... And that's smart.
The weirdest
away.
Thing about Greg, he knew that I didn't want him to fucking drink because that's how bad an addict he was. I never judged people, but I knew, you know. And I saw him in Montreal. We were doing this thing for at Club Soda for the festival. And I'm not one to judge. I've got my own fucking demons. But Greg had a beer, and I saw him take a sip and
you
look
knew
at
that
me.
Was the end.
I did. I knew it was the beginning of the end. He looked at me like kind of like meekly. And he was drinking the beer, and I'm thinking, fuck, enjoy it. I'm not your judge. I'm just your friend. But anyway, then I heard, you know, he went to the Stress Factory. You ever worked there?
Sure.
And that's where it was. Some people came
in. Is
that
where it happened?
Yeah, he was in the hotel at the Hyatt where he died. But I know how to pick up a podcast, don't I?
No, yeah. I love talking about this stuff died. Because I think I love talking about it because I think what's always fascinating to me is somebody's life on paper can be fantastic. Yeah. I got kids. So you know, you're told what to do, and the idea is you're going to be successful and happy when you're older. And the truth is that sometimes the most interesting people are the people that create things. They do a very good job at creating, whether it's painting or writing books or comedy. And somehow they make a mess of their life, or somehow they just can't not do those destructive things. And I don't think anybody has a blueprint for life, but I do understand when I hear about people like Robin and those guys who did a lot of drugs and who, you know, and did a lot of drinking and stuff. I guess maybe that's one of the reasons the great wisdoms, the religions like, you know, Judaism and Christianity and Islam, they are built around restriction. They're built around human self-control.
Yeah.
They're sort of the tenets are always like, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, and walk this line, work hard and be nice. And it's really a life of discipline when you decide to walk that path, the path to Mecca, the path to Jerusalem or wherever it might be, that is a very austere path. Yoga. I mean, yoga is, if you're a yogi, it's an austere lifestyle. It's a Spartan lifestyle.
I think it's yogurt, isn't it?
It is yogurt, too, and yogurt as well. Yeah. But even the military, like even Bushido, the way of the warrior, the Japanese, or just martial, if you look at military people, it's built around this notion that you've got to keep it together, that there's a great deal of self-control.
Yeah.
Daily practice. The daily practice of restriction. And sometimes I think, you know, the value of that is to keep us going and to keep you sort of on task.
So according to what kind of life you want, though, you know?
It does.
Rodney was the greatest example of a guy who was like Rasputin. He couldn't kill him. I mean, he still lived till 83, and had he not done so much drugs, he would have probably lived to 100, like George Burns. I mean, he was
tough. He did a lot of drugs, huh? He was so depressed. I worked with him for a week.
Well, he's always smoking weed, which is funny, but I don't think that kills you. But no. He used to do coke and stuff. And at his 80th birthday, he said to me, "Hey, kid, you want to get fucked up?
Come on. For real?"
Yeah, literally. I go, "Ronnie, I don't do any drugs." "All right, listen, baby." He says, he always does that beatnik kind of talk. "Listen, daddy, yo, baby." He says, "Stick around. I want to see you." "All right." I said, "Yeah, I'll be here." That funny, though?
Unreal.
Yeah.
That's a good Rodney, by the way. In his 80th birthday, he wanted to get fucked up. Which meant what?
It was either coke or weed, but it was just the idea that an 80-year-old man saying this to you.
"Hey, kid, you want to get fucked up?"
He said to me,
wow.
he was 75. I went down to see him at the Comedy Magic Club. Him and Harry Basil were playing. And he goes, Dana, do you mind leaving Dom and I here alone? I want to talk to him." And he wanted to roll a joint. I said, "Oh, you want to smoke it now?" He goes, "No, I want a buzz for the ride home." I said, "You're fucking 75. People are grandfathers. They got grandchildren on their laps, and you're taking a joint for the way home."
Yeah, I think I worked with him when he was. He died when?
I don't know.
Because I worked with him when he was 75 on Mad TV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was so depressed though. He was just depressed, and the time he came alive is when we actually performed for the live audience, and they went crazy for him.
Yeah,
you know, and he was so happy, he couldn't believe that they liked him so much.
You know what he told me? I mean, it's funny how people lose perspective. The genre is not right for it. He goes, "Yeah." He says, "Well, I thought I was fucking bombing when he's doing Caddyshack." He says, "You know, they weren't laughing." And I said, "Rodney, it's the fucking crew. They can't laugh.
Oh,
it's a movie." You know,
he killed in that movie.
He said that we were doing one of his last movies called The Fourth Tenor, and Harry Basil was the director, and Roddy and I had a scene, and Harry goes, "Okay, let's take that again." He goes, "Harry, how many fucking times you got to take these cocksuckers?" And I go, and he looks to me for sympathy. I go, "Ronnie, it's a movie. You can't take one shot and just move on." I said, if they did that, we'd be done the whole shoot in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He was very impatient that way. I remember I sat down next to him. I felt bad for him. We were working. He's eating. He's just looking down at his plate. He's eating out of a plastic plate and a fork. And I thought, well, this is as good as it gets, right? You know, you know what I mean? You do a movie and you're sitting next to Martin Sheen or, you know, Rodney Dangerfield, people who've been doing it for a long time. And they're eating the same food you are out of a plastic cup with a plate. You know, there's nothing glamorous. They're in the background for the background shot. And it's never glamorous. He's eating. And I go, "How you doing, boss?" He goes, "Don't call me boss. I don't like when people call me boss."
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he's just so, I said, he goes, "I'm trying to diet, you know. I said, well, how's it going? Because, you know me, I love talking about food and diet. I want to help him. He goes, yeah, it's, for me, you know, I know how to eat. This is, I look at my food. It's not giving me a hard time. You know, it's not judging me. My whole life, you look at your life, it's so
this?
Full of, yeah, he goes, you look at your life, it's so full of disappointment. But then your food has none of that. I was like, Jesus Christ, dude. This is, I remember taking care of him. I remember literally thinking, I'm going to take care of him for the week. Everybody else, well, you know, I was just, I don't know. I get depressed when I think about that story.
This is how crazy he was, which I love the fucking lunatic. Like, Bill Burr's got a little bit of this to him.
Bill Burr's great.
Oh, I love it. He goes, I guess, one night, because I really want you to do my podcast. I go, yeah, Bill. He said, I hardly ever have anybody on. I love you to do it. I said, great. And then I said, you know, I'm available next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. He goes, hey, Dom, don't put the full court press on. I said, you'll do it. I said, you were the one that asked me, you fucking nitwit. But Rodney's he had gotten sick, and I was in Connecticut. That's where he had a house, and he was in Florida. So I call him up. I say, how you doing, man? I heard you got sick. Oh, he said, I had a little stroke. I said, what do you mean a little stroke? Just the word stroke scary. Oh, it was a mini stroke. I said, well, take care of yourself. Well, he goes, where are you at? I said, I'm in Connecticut. He says, why don't you stay at my house? I go, Eddie Shine's wife is there. I go, well, I got my girlfriend with me. I don't want to stay in the house. He said, stay there. He goes, I got the whole thing, the jacuzzi. He keeps selling it to me. And I go, you know what, Ronnie? I don't want to stay at the house, but the 49ers are playing the Giants. And on my way up to, I was going up to Mystic, Connecticut. I said, can I stop and watch the game there? He said, yeah, that's fine, kid. Enjoy yourself. You know, enjoy the place. It's your home. Calls me back about 10 minutes later. He goes, now listen, don't have any fucking parties over there, right? I go, what are you talking about? He says, you know, you could use the place, but, you know, I don't want you or your girlfriend going fucking crazy in there. I go, you were the one that asked me. I didn't even want to stay at your fucking place. Don't have any, like, we're going to have a party in Connecticut.
Yeah, in Connecticut. You know, who do I know? Rodney Dangerfield's house. Oh, yeah. Dom Herrera, we got to wrap it up. You got to come back. There's not enough time.
Definitely.
You got too many stories.
Definitely.
That's Dom Herrera. It's a great Dom Herrera, one of my favorite people, and great comic. And
hey, I'll be at the Columbus Funny Bone in February in Rochester, the Comedy Club, which is the coolest name for a comedy club.
Yeah,
that's it, the Comedy Club.
Go see him. He's a legend and funny.
I'm not legend my ass. I'm just old and fat.
The kid is a legend. The kid's a legend already. He's got another 30, 40 years to live.
Thank you, Brian Callen.
Go see him or read about him later. This is Brian Callen. For some reason, when I'm around Dom, I talk like this. Like I'm from the East Coast and I spend a lot of time. All right, everybody. This is Brian.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.